Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. Today, I'm so happy. Oh, my God, it's rare that I get so white-pilled about the news, but don't we have an amazing news environment and internet? Liberty is back. Nick Fuentes is chatting with AOC directly on Twitter. Lily is doing whatever Lily is doing. She's now trying to cause a normie uprising. And Tim Pool has embarked onto blood sports. My God. And now Cassandra, the aide of Tim Pool, has followed me on X. I feel like maybe I will be able at some point to be on Tim Pool's new blood sports show, which it was the first time I watched it. I don't know if there were some before. But there was a very interesting, Tim has put together, I've been critical of Tim for years for his show becoming stale. But I'm going to reward him and applaud when he does good. And he's put together a show between him, Richard Spencer, Andrew Wilson. And that was a very intense exchange, many hours. It was deep. And it was all that I loved about blood sports. And I feel like a kind of vindication, because back in the days, at the beginning of live streaming in 2013, I was appearing on the Drunken Peasants, which was the biggest show back then. And I was always doing activism so that we get debates, we get intellectual debates, and we get actual debates about current things. And TJ of the Drunken Peasants didn't like this. It was like, I don't think it's the right forum. And I was like, come on, bro. Show, you're at the top of the world. Use your power. You're at the top of the world. Use your power to educate people. I mean, isn't it the whole idea of militant atheism, secularist? Don't you want to educate people? And the people who are guardians of a top show on YouTube, they are always extremely shy at exploring too deep intellectually, because they know that the feel-good aspect of their show keeps their low IQ base in. So it's always a risk to do intellectual stuff. And so, you know, you can separate the YouTube eras between Drunken Peasants being the main show, Warski Live being the main show, and now Timcast being the main show. And I'm happy that I've been participating to these eras in various functions. With Drunken Peasants, I was appearing as a guest, being interviewed, and I was pushing for debates. And sometimes they would do one, but they were like, I don't know if the crowd's going to like this. It's too intellectual. Then the Warski Live era showed up. And, you know, you can call it the Warski Live / the public space era, where we did blood sports and we showed that there was a demand for it. Then censorship came in, and this totally knocked down intense political conversation on YouTube. So you could have thought that this would never come back. And Tim Pool is now bringing it back, and he's publishing it straight on Twitter. You have a Richard Spencer in studio discussion with Tim Pool. I was wondering if we would see this one day. I was wondering if we would see this one day, and today we see it. It's so amazing to me. I'm happy. Melodic says JF versus Molyneux, the Canadians. We've had one. People are not satisfied by this debate, but it's. People are like, I can't believe JF brought up taxicab geometry. Well, you know, think about it, and taxicab geometry undermines the principles that he was stating. You know, you had a Stéphane Molyneux claiming pi is always an irrational number. Well, not in taxicab geometry, Stéphane. And it's very important. It's important. And so it's like, okay, the low IQs of the internet have not accepted my argument, but it's still correct. It's still correct. And what an amazing exchange, because Richard Spencer came in with kind of his usual I mean, it's not the first time he's been doing it. It's kind of a clownish argument at first, but when you think about it, he may be right. I think that he's being vindicated with time with this argument. The argument is basically Joe Biden is more racist than Trump. Joe Biden is more conservative than Trump. And with the current Trump program, we will not get a conservative Trump. Trump is coming under a very clear banner of centrism, if not center-leftism, and he's coming with a very, very pro-Israeli approach. So, and you start having now you have, just to tell you how intelligent Richard Spencer is. Richard Spencer in 2020 saw it coming and said, "We were betrayed by Trump. We must exert our leverage." And that means not voting for Trump. And if we want to exert our leverage to the maximum, we should vote for Joe Biden. Because as long as our Republican candidates are not giving us what they promise, we need to punish them. And Trump is doing exactly this. He gathered a very right-wing base, but he's offering a program that is not right-wing. Just to tell you how visionary Richard Spencer is with this, both Tim Pool and Andrew Wilson couldn't digest what he was saying. But you have Nick Fuentes, me, Candace Owens at this point, who are all saying, careful, we're not going to vote for Trump. We might have to not vote for Trump. We might have to encourage people to not vote at all or to vote Biden. Because Trump is coming in with such Zionism and such, visa programs for everyone. And Nick Fuentes says, I just don't believe that there's going to be deportation. Mass deportation will not happen under Trump. And therefore, what do you want to do? Well, you want to teach a lesson to future Republican candidates, which is to say, if you don't offer us a right-wing program, you will always lose. Always lose. Because Trump is going for the black vote, for the vote of for the Jewish vote, the vote of everyone who does not who does not usually support him, who does not usually vote Republican. But it's like trying to extend into this base vote while forgetting your initial base of support, which is still a white majority of the U.S. I don't feel comfortable creating a message where Republican candidates can consider the white base of vote acquired, because that means less power for whites even before we become a minority. So the strategy of Richard Spencer is totally visionary, and he's been doing it before anyone. He's been doing it back in 2020, 2019. So his argument, in the end was hard to digest for Tim Pool and Andrew Wilson. And basically their reaction to it was, well, Joe Biden is still more of a progressive than Trump. And, I don't know. I don't know. The Trump program that we have in front of us may very well lead to a presidency that is actually more progressive because of the desire of Trump to please all those minorities. In a way, Joe Biden is leading a centrist administration of some sort that is kind of far from his own base, that because his base is acquired. Joe Biden doesn't have to do much to please the black vote and to acquire the LGBT vote. And so he does a lot of symbolic moves to please them. But I don't know that he's been giving them very much. And at the same time, he seems to be on a legal path to basically legalize the illegals. So give them a kind of veto or an amnesty so that they are citizens or they are permanent residents, and Trump won't be able to do anything about it Once they are declared this, you'll have the courts saying, hey, you can't, it's not because you can, you change a president that they lose their rights. So Joe Biden is setting up a situation of acquired rights for all illegal immigrants, probably before he leaves office. He's giving mass amnesty. So what are we going to get truly from Trump? Ture says, because the debate evaded the race question for 2 hours, that's why Spencer's point couldn't land. Yeah, perhaps that is true. Perhaps that Spencer was neutralized on choices of words, which led an apparent, and I believe that the kind of overhand that it looked like Tim Pool had and that Andrew Wilson had maybe was due to some demand on not using certain words, because laid out the way I just did, I don't know that Tim Pool has a good argument against this. The Africa part of the debate was funny, says Révolution Culturelle.
Wouldn't you like to go to the African continent and it's free? Like, they're just, they're animals everywhere. It's dangerous. In fact, it's a truly undiscovered place. What? Isn't there some deep spiritual need we have for nature? Don't you want North America?
Richard Spencer was talking of a hypothetical depopulated African continent. And I don't know exactly what was the intended meaning, but of course it was coming out as, well, if there's no humans in Africa anymore, what happened? What happened to the black? And Richard Spencer was not commenting on this. He was just he was just laying out a hypothetical depopulated Africa. And don't we like it that we're seeing the lions, the elephants? I want to see nature. Oh my God, that was hilarious. So yeah, they were talking about population. So Richard Spencer here got a good argument in and basically introduced to a population, you know, the Timcast audience, introduced questions of population reduction and eugenics that they were probably not very used to hear, at least the section of the crowd that were just Tim Pool's fan. They are not exposed to this on an everyday basis the way we are here or the way we've been on any shows I've been hosting, you know. So it was good to see Richard Spencer making a foray where he basically argued for a form of antinatalism being fit for a more elitist world in which we don't just reproduce in a dumb way everyone at maximal capacity to fill the maximal capacity of the earth with low IQ people. That's a very good, interesting argument. Of course, I would have liked to be there. I had much to say about this. The big problem is you don't have control. So there is a false debate that was had between him and Andrew Wilson. It's the false debate between, do we want a world that is less populated but filled with more quality people, or a world that is filled with low IQ people? You don't get to choose between these two options. You really only get to choose whether you have an anti-natalist propaganda and whether you do have a pro-natalist propaganda. And those propaganda, they affect the populations, and they affect the populations asymmetrically, such that if you have an anti-natalist propaganda, it's probably affecting the high IQ. So you start a propagandistic effort of any kind, say you have intellectual arguments, you want a world that is less populated, but the only people who listen to you are the high IQ. They stop breathing, leaving a relatively lower population Earth to exist, but it's filled with low IQs. So you failed. Now you can have a pro-natalist propaganda. The pro-natalist propaganda probably touches maybe equal the low IQs and the high IQs. So there's really no way to ensure an elitist world. This is the great fatality of evolution. There's no way of ensuring an elitist world without having a meritocracy. So deciding between Andrew Wilson that says we should be pronatalist and Richard Spencer who says we should be antinatalist is a false decision. You don't have that choice. The only choice you have is, do you have a meritocracy or not? And under that meritocracy, a subset, there will be selective forces, and the meritocracy can be economic. It can be literally just biological also. It can be both. Most of the time it will be both. And the meritocracy must be cared for. It must be maintained, because as soon as you have the state coming in and saying, we're going to reward you for being a single mom, here, Lily, here's some mushrooms. We're going to pay your mushroom expenses, Lily, since you're a single mom, then you have a problem of the destruction of the meritocracy. That happens as soon as there is redistribution. So the real choice is between a meritocratic and a non-meritocratic system, and the population of the planet will adjust in consequence. And the low IQs and the high IQs will perform in this world differentially only if there is a meritocracy. So on that point, I wouldn't say that Andrew Wilson won or Richard Spencer won. I would say everyone won, because we had an interesting eugenic consideration. I've been working for this all my life, by the way. I've been like this is why I'm very, very happy today. All my life, I have been working for one thing: bring up the theory of evolution in technocratic societal conversation, because ignoring it is a big lie that we do to everyone. And so to me, everyone was winning in this debate, because the audience got to think about, hey, it's true, we're I've been to McDonald's, and holy shit, are we filling our countries with low skill workers and very high populations of them? And so everyone wins, and this part of the conversation, in fact, the whole thing, I wouldn't attribute a winner. I would say it was a very deep, interesting conversation. But surprise at the end, Andrew Wilson commits a blood sports error, and I would say looks kind of off against Tim Pool. This was the big surprise of this debate, where Richard Spencer totally withdrew and let Andrew Wilson commit his mistake. Andrew Wilson, at some point, arguing with Richard Spencer, just threw it as a side point. Tim Pool and your Civil War is coming, Civil War is coming. We've been hearing you make that prediction for years, and I never saw it coming. And it's like, oops. First, you make the error of attacking the host, and you're not fully prepared for a debate with the host. You came in prepared in a mindset for against Richard Spencer. But as it turns out, and you could think that Tim Pool is unintelligent because he's not been exposed to blood sports, so he's not a product of, debate experience of the kind that I am, Richard Spencer is, Andrew Wilson is. These guys are sharks of the debate world. I am a shark of the debate world. Andrew Wilson against the novice Tim Pool drops this, and Tim Pool's come back to him and he says, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And Tim Pool basically made the case that, first, you're making a straw man by claiming that I said there would be a civil war this year or next year. I never said this. So Tim Pool claims a straw man and kind of wins the argument, because Andrew is like, well, I'm not super prepared. I don't know exactly what it is that you said. So Tim Pool owns on the straw man accusation. And then Tim Pool's come back and says, It's Tim Pool said, it's not a civil war yet, but there are people gunning each other for political reasons. True. And there is January 6th, you know, a kind of entry into blocking politics with force, with presence, if you will. And so I never said it would be civil war today, but these events, they don't bode well if you think of it in the coming decades. Those are the initial events to a civil war. And he defended his argument with a stellar presentation of the history of the Civil War in the US by showing, hey, you know, there were precedents before we called it the Civil War. There were events here and there. And he starts with the history, a history that I don't even know. But that was absolutely beautiful to see Tim Pool make a solid argument in a blood sports context when he's not been in a blood sports context anywhere. And it was heartwarming. Congratulations to Tim Pool, because to me, Andrew Wilson is one of the masters of debate, not a debate god. I know, you know, when I said that last time, I said Andrew Wilson is not a debate god. He's a master of debate. He's a master debater. You know what Andrew did? He went on the Whatever podcast, and I don't know, maybe he's friends with the staff there. He got them to label his show Andrew Wilson, God of Debate. I'm sure it was for me. I'm sure Andrew Wilson tricked his way into getting the staff of Whatever podcast to call him a God debater. So to me, yes, Andrew is a very high quality, not yet God tier. I think that essentially this interaction with Tim Pool shows that Andrew Wilson still has a notch to become a God debater. I think he will become one at some point. But Tim Pool really owned him on historical description of the Civil War. And I was like, oh, yes, yes, a novice of the blood sports world owns my friend Andrew Wilson. Wow. I loved seeing this. That's why I'm happy today. So that was it. Those were the three events, the three important parts of the conversation. Overall, I'm super enthusiastic about the future for this Tenet Media debate platform. I think it's too bad that Nick Fuentes refused to go on there for now, but I understand Nick Fuentes was insulted because he was initially invited for the mainstream show, and to be on a B-roll show kind of sucks. And so for now, it's a no for Nick Fuentes, but I think we'll see Nick Fuentes on there at some point. Because I think this is the future. In a free internet with a free X and the return of the R word, the F word, the N word even are coming back to the internet, I hear retarded every day at this point. It's like, it's almost cringe. The R word has become cringe because now Lily is saying the N word. I can't believe that this is happening. This is the best timeline. Oh, it's too bad. I think politically it sucks because we don't have a Trump. We don't have a commitment from Trump at this point. Even Candace Owens. I mean, Candace Owens, you know, you would think that that Trump would have acquired her vote. But no, Candace Owens is announcing that Trump has to do something for the right that he... She's basically trying to negotiate. She says she endorses Vivek Ramaswamy or Thomas Massey for Trump's VP pick and says she will not vote for Trump if he picks a neocon like Nikki Haley, Tom Cotton, or Mike Pompeo. Don't do this error, Trump. Don't take these creatures of the mainstream politics. Just go all in. and win the vote of people, the support of people like Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes. You need them. En direct de la Révolution culturelle, says these last months, the culture show was better than the Timcast IRL night show. Oh, very nice. So it's been going on for a while. I didn't know at all. I had seen the label Tenet, but I had not seen the product. So I'm happy I've seen the product. Boiling Frog is making word combinations that shouldn't even be possible. He's working like a chemist, mixing in the N-word with the R-word and creating new hydric structures. Matt sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, salute to JF. I've enjoyed your recent investigations into pro-Jewish social media influencer. It's a whole business. And, you know, Lily is continuing to say fuck off to everyone on Twitter. Someone was coming to her, a Christian, saying, Lily, Bible thumpers founded this country, not foul-mouthed single moms who do mushrooms with strangers in strange cities and then cry victim on Twitter when they get blowback. Good day, please repent. She says, fuck off, Pharisee. Fuck off, Pharisee. What does that mean in this context? I know there are some people who say the Pharisees were the Jews. Maybe. I think some people say this. I'm going to have to ask my girlfriend to explain to me what branch of religions is happening here. This seems like a war between different branches of religion, but I'm laughing my ass off. Now, Lily, I think this video is dedicated to me. Basically, Lily is calling for a normie movement against the autist of the internet. She says, I'm gay. Let's listen to, I mean, she doesn't name my name, but I think that is addressed to me. The way she yells gay at the camera, I feel targeted. I'm not gay, by the way, Lily.
All right, y'all. So me and you, we're the normies. We are the fucking normal people.
The normies. They now have their official label on the internet. The world was so good while they were not here.
The ones who built this damn country, and we have...
I don't know. If you look at the founding fathers, they may have looked a little bit more like me and a little less like you. Just saying. Maybe they didn't have my accent, but they probably had my autism.
These fringes on the far right, we have the fringes on the far left, that they all have their little club.
Oh no, she got butt by the center. So now she's the new Brett Weinstein. I want this, the far right and the far left. He's aiming for the center, just like Elon Musk. I want to piss the far right, the far left. They aim at the center, and they don't realize that the center is already occupied. The center is dominated. And as long as you don't solve the problem of Jewish control of the center, and of the two sides within the Overton window, you don't have a solution. Because what's your solution? You're going to have a normie centrist alternative leverage onto politics? What are your demands as a centrist? To censor people like me?
Clubs, they all have their little cliques, they all have their little catchphrases, and they both fucking hate me. They both hate me because I represent you.
I don't hate you, Lily. I made six shows about you, and it was all in the spirit of trying to reduce the expectations toward you because you don't seem totally set on your positioning on the political spectrum. But I don't hate you.
Because we're normal. Because
yeah, the fact that you're normal is kind of annoying.
I don't want to join your gay club. Because we don't want to be a part of that gay shit. We're just normal people who work and pay taxes and get shit on.
And see, that's a problem. You are paying taxes and you fear to be far right enough to undermine the system that drains these taxes from you. And so now you're in problem because your taxes are being used to fund your enemy. And people, in fact, who want to take more taxes from you.
On. The government shits on us, the far right and the far left shits on us, and ultimately no one gives a shit about...
Well, yeah, but it's because normies have been in control of politics forever, and it has stabilized into a center of politics that is sure to be exploiting all of us, no matter what happens. No matter, in fact, if Trump or Biden wins, we're stuck with the problem of the center here. So the solution that you present is actually the problem. Normie centrist, constantly not using their political leverage and constantly worsening the state of government by letting it grow and grow, is a problem.
About fixing this country, because they're so...
I mean, it's almost a parody like The Network, you know, the movie Network. You know, the guy appears on cable TV in, what, the 70s or the 80s, and he's like, I'm going to talk to regular people. We've had enough. And he kind of becomes a revolutionary host of a TV news show. We've had enough. Let's fix the government. Well, those are empty promises because you don't have a mechanism. If you can't stand there in front of the camera and say, I'm going to abolish the IRS, then you don't have an idea of how you're going to fix the government.
Busy, it's a circle jerk. They're so busy trying to, you know, appease their own and stay in the good graces of their own and get famous and whatever, that they don't care.
Well, I'm not trying to get famous. I'm trying to have a productive and truthful political progression for America. That's what I'm trying to do at all points of my life.
About America. That's why nothing gets done in this country. Because they're so busy, like, fighting amongst themselves, like the little fucking pussies that they are, that they don't care to do actually anything about changing the country. They like to talk about how oppressed we are. Oh, they shut down our venues. Oh, they're all racist. White supremacy.
Well... It's important whether the venues are getting shut down, because if the venues are getting shut down, if we're being censored on the internet, then we can't even have a truthful discussion. And then if the truth isn't there, then the lies get exploited against us. And then we get Wikipedia biographies that are hit pieces against us, written by Antifa, and everything in it is false. And then our IDs don't get the exposure because people are lying about us. If we get shut down, we lose on the first move. There's not even a fight. So that's why truthful political conversation is what I've been working on all my life. And there's so many layers of shit before you get to the truth. There's the censor. There's the government. There's the hit pieces. There's the lying media. There's the layer of the gatekeeping media. And then there's the hit pieces, the lies that are combined against you because you touch on subjects that they don't like. And if you want a truthful political conversation, you have to go through all these layers of shit. And yes, it includes complaining if we lose a venue, because then speech gets censored, and then you start having a blind spot in the public conversation. That is all extremely fucking important. No matter how much you yell your stupid position against it, it's extremely important.
Supremacy is the biggest danger in this country. Sure. Sure, you dumbass. Meanwhile, me and you, the normal people who, like, went to college, we didn't buy into the woke cult. We're normal. We've got common sense. We're getting shit on by everyone.
Yeah, well, you guys are kind of annoying.
Like, Republicans are just as bad as Democrats. They're all the same. That's what I have discovered in this whole thing, is that they're all the same and they don't give a shit about us. So I am forming an alliance of normal fucking people. We're not Puritans. We're not Bible thumpers. We have the courage of our convictions. We're just normal ass people. And it's time for us to stand back, take the country back, and stop listening to these losers on the far right and the far left. They're all losers. Like, I'm amazed.
What are you? What are you if I'm a loser? What have you done in your life? I've come up with a scientific theory. I'm not a loser. My scientific theory is still valid. I am the father of the theory of phenotypic revolution. What makes me a loser that doesn't make you a loser? Because you have more Twitter followers in a week than I had in 7 years? I don't care about the followers, because the followers are a measure of your norminess, Lily. The measure of your appeal to a bunch of fucking retards. That's what you appeal to.
I just walked into a certain of these groups and I was like, wow, loser, loser, loser. They don't have any life outside of Twitter. That's why they're so obsessed with me.
Yeah, because Twitter is the public conversation. It's where our jobs happen. Yes, there is nothing else for an influencer than winning a small piece of that public conversation. That's why we work on Twitter. By the way, before Twitter, there were other things, but it wasn't as great as Twitter. Twitter is really the top of the political conversation, the peak for us influencers.
They're like, oh, she got all these followers overnight. She must be this or must be that. All it is jealousy. You bitches are fucking jealous.
I do not know jealousy. I am so abnormal. You have no idea how it happens in my mind. Jealousy is impossible.
You're just mad because your whole life surrounds is all about Twitter. Your whole life is all about your followers and your engagement. I don't give a shit.
It's my professional life for sure. It's not my whole life. I have loved ones. I have a great life. My life is so great that it wouldn't cross my mind to eat mushrooms, magic mushrooms. My life is so great that I wouldn't want to lose a second of it, deluded at thinking about stuff that doesn't exist. That's how awesome my life is. Now, what do you have? What do you have? You have a child that you love so much that you left him at home while you were partying on magic mushrooms at AF Pack in Detroit.
Shit about that. I'm just a normal person. I've gotten thrown into all this shit. I didn't choose this. I didn't ask for this. And you fucking pussies can't stand to see a normal person succeed. You can't stand to see somebody who's not...
It's because we know what's happening after this. We know what happened to your normal brain. Eventually, you're going to have a conflict between the following the search for truth, for truthful political conversation, and the social taboos that are deeply embedded into your mind, even if you think you didn't buy in the woke. You bought it, you just don't know it. There's a layer of woke in you. If you're living in America and you're not a gig-up psychopathic autist right now, there's a layer of woke inside of you. There's a layer of post-World War II consensus that will be the last veneer that we can't scratch out. And that day, you, and apparently it's already happening. She's speed running her anti-far-right revolution, as people were pointing out. People wanted to post the example of her career as a speed run of the far right arc. within a week, she went from a far right personality dropping the N-word to an illuminated centrist feminist. That was pointed out by Cassandra, I think, on Twitter. We'll see her tweet later. But holy shit.
I'm gonna come and lick your ass. I'm not interested in being part of your club. Your club is gay. And so are you.
I'm not gay. My club is not gay. My club is absolute hetero. You just can't handle the level of masculinity that I exude.
So are you. Almost said it.
She almost called me a frog. She said F. She almost called me a frog.
Anyway, us normies, the frat boys, the normal girls, the boat people, we drink a beer, we have fun, we love 4th of July.
Oh my God, she's one of these, she's one of these American flag wearing people with boats and, you know, artifice, fireworks, holy shit. And she identifies explicitly as a normie cheerleader. You know, she's like, oh yeah, we were the cheerleaders and the quarterbacks. These fucking losers on the internet, they think too much.
We're American patriots. We're just normal American patriots. And these fringe groups, these gay fringe groups, don't give a shit about us. So we're forming a new alliance. It's us against them, motherfucker.
Oh my God. This is fucking hilarious. I feel like I'm in front of... I'm getting old. This feels like a teenage daughter that is in a revolt. And she's like, Dad, you never understand with all your ideologies and fuck this. And we're just normal people. We're going to make our own movement. It's like, go ahead. Make your movement of normies. If you don't think political strategy, you're going to be worth nothing. If you're too right wing, you start having it pieces written about you in the Jewish press, and then you're going to start wondering, holy shit, why is every single fucking person writing about me negatively a Jew? And then you're going to start asking questions, and you're going to fall within the far right category. Or you're never going to do this, and you're going to stay in your blind understanding of it's just a bunch of cliques and gays and everyone is gay. And you're not going to understand politics meaningfully. I don't even hate Lily. I think I really look at her like a child. She is a child and she thinks she can get through what better thinkers and more intelligent people than her have thought for decades, literally decades. She is Silly Lily, says Saturn Shines. That would be a good nickname for her. I'm going to call her Silly Lily. It's like, it's cute. It's fucking cute to think that people have not gone through this before. I'm sorry, Lily. Read about the history of Brett Weinstein's Unity 2020 party. And you'll see that basically... this has been attempted again and again in the history of politics. It's like, oh yeah, both the right and the left are wrong and we want something more normal. No, it's like the left and the right are logical extrapolations of absolutely theoretical ideas that have been pushed and thought of by giants before you. And anything you can think of will always fall within the boxes that we've drawn. We're more intelligent than you. Like, we are orders of magnitude more intelligent than you. We're not doing this for the club. We're so fucking autistic, we don't even care about having friends. But we've thought these things through because we know that ideas end up colliding when shit hits the fan, if you will. And our theoretical extrapolations are not for the purpose of gathering social acceptability. They are for the purpose of predicting the world. And we predict you, Lily. We knew that you would arrive. We know what's the consequences of the ideas you're following. You are following blind, self-deceptive populism. And there's a limit to what it can do, and there's a limit to the political leverage you can have with it, and there's a limit to all of the causes and consequences that you will ever have in the world. Because the world is limited. The world is thermodynamically sealed. And you're just a little piece of crap traveling through it. I mean, I was starting this show a little bit white-pilled. Now we're headed in a black-pilled direction. Atomic Dissonance says, sends $15. Thank you so much for the generous donation. He says, are you familiar with Peter Sterling, the neuroscientist who coined allostasis? He says that organ systems operate like a communist economy, exchanging resources on a from each by ability to each by need basis, taking blood from digestion to assist muscles during exercise. Is this true? I was not familiar with the idea stated that way, but I would say it is true. It is true. But the way to understand this is the body is an ant colony. Basically, the evolutionary pattern that applies to what Richard Dawkins was calling the somatic cells. So the cells in your body that are not meant for reproduction. So basically every cell of your body except the sperm or the egg. So what applies as a principle is their service to the queen is what determines their evolutionary fitness. Now, so for an ant colony, it means each individual ant really doesn't have its own genetic interest. The individual ant's sterile worker ant success is determined entirely by the success of her queen. Therefore, the ant is self-sacrificial and will share information and self-kill if needed to save the queen. Now, that is true of a multicellular organism too. The somatic cells in our body are like the sterile workers. Same thing. It's an accident at first. We gave birth to handicapped babies. And so when we were a single cell, it used to be that all of our babies would lead to their own baby. So that was our unicellular past. Eventually, an accident happened. A cell gave birth to handicapped, retarded babies. Now, our handicapped, retarded babies were useless, you would have thought they would be useless because they couldn't make babies. But they turned out to be very useful. As it turned out, the best way to survive as a talented unicellular organism is to have to be surrounded by a shell of retarded babies. You can use them as shields. You can use them as blockhead strategies. You can use them to just pump resources toward the queen. And that's how multicellular organisms are born. And if you want to the whole story, read chapter 11 of The Revolutionary Phenotype. So eventually, yes, in the kind of collaboration that develops between any sterile worker system, it's all for the queen, and for you, it's all for your balls, and it's all for your eggs. Saturn Shine says, "Rachel Mad Cow." I wasn't aware of this nickname for Rachel Maddow. I like it. I love it. Rachel Mad Cow. Deng Dahl says, of course, the Pharisees are Jews. Well, okay, but why is she calling her a Pharisee? I don't know. Is she a Jew? I don't know. Nick Fuentes explains quite accurately that we're probably not going to get much deportations under Trump.
We have a border crisis. We have 7 million new illegals in the past 4 years. And now it's 500,000 get permanent residency. And this is just a taste. You know eventually they're going to give residency to all these people, right? They're all going to get residency. They're not going back. People are always saying, you're going to go back. They're not going back. They will never go back. They're going to get amnestied piece by delicious piece until every last one of them is a lawful resident and all their kids are going to be citizens. And you want to know why? You want to know why they're never going to get deported? Because here's what's going to happen. Trump is going to call up the deportation task force. And I'm skeptical he'll even do that. Because it didn't happen last time. But let's say he did. They're going to...
And Nick Fuentes goes through. I mean, you're going to have layers of bureaucrats blocking this. You're going to have judges blocking this. You're going to have Joe Biden declaring amnesty in advance. And by the time you even have a single one of them on a plane, there's millions of them who are now being processed through the entry point. there's no way Trump will go through all this and then accept that he becomes hated in the mainstream media. Trump is too much of a social creature, exactly like Lily. See, the problem of Trump is exactly the problem of Lily. They want to please. If you want to please, you're not going to find the truth, Lily. And if Trump wants to please, he's not going to deport 1 million illegal migrants. It's not happening. Absolutely, I think that Nick is right on this. It's not happening. And so we're getting our votes taken by Trump, but without much of a promise on anything. It's very insulting. James says, Pharisees are just the bad characters in the New Testament. Lily is making the simple statement, she is good and they are bad. I don't think her statement is deeper than that. Oh, okay, so fuck off, Pharisee. It's like, fuck off, annoying person. Okay. Ian says, JF, what about the US prevented you from naturalizing those years back? What would make you change your mind? Well, my situation in the U.S. was, I had my green card. I could have become a citizen. But I was like, if the U.S. is kidnapping children through family courts, then what is there for me in this country? So I thought, I'm going to go try making babies in another country. And I decided to go back to Quebec. And then I saw that Quebec family court also were like this. So then I moved out of Quebec, and that's the story of my life. I moved from place to place in the search of a place where they don't kidnap children through family courts. And I finally found one. So I finally found happiness after after having three persons that I love be kidnapped by states. One person kidnapped by the state of North Carolina, still kidnapped. One fiancé kidnapped by the state of Texas, still kidnapped. One person that I love kidnapped by the province of Quebec, still kidnapped. And so I had to suffer through a lot of leftist persecution before I found liberty. So you tell me, why did I not stay in the US? It's because they kidnapped my loved ones and they kidnapped my fiance on the basis that, oh, she cannot consent. Oh, she wants to be with you, but no, she's retarded. <That's right. laughs> And all I ever had to do was move away, find a new place, and test if if liberty still existed. Matt says, the promised land of inseminations. Yes, I mean, it's so sad. It's so sad that there are people I had to leave behind, but there was nothing I could do. You can't do anything about a judge who decides that he believes false allegations about you. You don't have recourse. I tried everything. I tried appeals. I tried getting justice. But the lawyers, even that I would consult then, they would tell me, no, Jeff, there's no such thing as father's right. They're going to kidnap your child. So it's like, okay. That's what led me to move in various places. A majority of Quebecers believe Israel is committing genocide in the Gaza Strip. I do believe too. I mean, it's not even a question. That's why it's kind of fascinating that there are people who call this disinformation. Oh my God, people are crazy. They believe there's a genocide. Well, it's an objective question. Are the points for the definition of a genocide by the Geneva Convention, are they met or are they not met? So many of them are met, and you would really only need to meet one to have a genocide. But so many of them are met that no one can argue there is not a genocide happening. Yet, it's you have people in the Twitter reply saying, oh, these Quebecois people, they're stupid. Because in Quebec, it's 53% who believe there's a genocide. In the rest of Canada, it's more like 46. But it's not like 46 versus 54. It's 46, so it's a plurality. Most people believe there's a genocide. But then there's like 20 or 30 persons who don't want to answer. So basically, I think it's accepted generally socially in Canada that what Israel is committing right now in Gaza is a genocide. What else do we have before we close the show? The leftists, they either win at censorship or they are getting bad years on the internet. And right now the leftists are in bad years because the world is getting freer on the internet. Elon has freed the world of the internet, and now the leftists are seething. Jesus, the responses to the back and forth between these two, Nick Fuentes and AOC, is disturbing. She responds clearly, "I want nothing to do with you," and explains that they have irreconcilable ideological differences. And the right-wing trolls respond with stuff like this. "No way AOC is flirting with Nick. Looks like AOC is playing hard to get. Stop playing hard to get, you know you love us gripers," another person wrote, referencing the name of Fuentes' following. I know it's a stereotype that terminally online right-wing trolls have no idea how to interact with women. But how the fuck do they interpret "I want nothing to do with you" as flirting? The left is getting absolutely raped in the environment of freedom, and I am enjoying it. We have a new meme that is arising. First, there is a super chat. Thank you so much for the donation. The show does need your support. If you'd like me to continue being here almost every night, so feel free to join the Patreon or the Subscribestar. In fact, I'm late. We should have our monthly hangout. Let me talk to the people and see. Maybe next week. We'll schedule it late this month, but I was too busy doing other things. But if you'd like to support the show, join the Patreon or the Subscribestar. You will help support my life on a monthly basis. Swing It sends a super chat. He says, "Hi, Jeff. Some months ago, you predicted that the peak for BTC during this bull run would occur around the summer. Do you think this is still the case?" Look, it's fascinating how stable Bitcoin has been. It seems stuck. I would say that most people currently are discussing and seeing more toward the fall and toward even beginning of 2025, because basically you need two things to happen right now to kick Bitcoin into infinity. You need quantitative easing announcements, are impressions of quantitative easing coming, or you need a Trump election, or both. I believe that one of these events will happen. And I believe that anyways, we are in summer. The problem is the businesses are in vacation. There's less decisions being made. There's less meetings of the boards of various companies. So you're not likely to have a massive institutional rise in July at the middle of vacation. But as John Drake says, usually goes up in August, I believe. Yeah, I would say end of summer, beginning of fall, we should see a breadth of up. That is what I'm expecting, at least. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but I still think that it's in the books to have a fall rise as the expectations for maybe a Trump victory solidify. Or if not, then beginning of 2025, when a Fed, a kind of distressed Fed, finds itself forced to start printing money. And yes, the Trump pro-Bitcoin stance is kind of a surprise that I didn't expect. So I'm surprised by how stable the price has been in the last month. But at the same time, I was surprised by how fast we reached that price. So I was kind of surprised by how quick we got there. But that was people trying to front run the current bull run. And we may conclude that basically people are getting used to bull runs, and there's more and more people trying to front run it in advance. But I still believe that it would be quite surprising to me if that was the top, 73,000 of this bull run. I find that it would be a break of previous patterns. Not impossible, but I would be surprised personally. We have a new meme, the Hawk Tua girl. It's kind of an annoying meme to me because it reminds me that there's more and more white women or white-looking women who are basically speaking black. They're speaking black. And this woman was describing a blowjob technique that she has as part of some Vox Pop.
How do you get over a breakup?
The only way to get over one is get under another.
So the only way to get over one is to get under another.
This
mother don't miss.
What's one move in bed that makes a man go crazy?
And then the guy is asking her, what's a move in bed that makes the guy go crazy?
Crazy every time.
Oh, you gotta give him that hook to it. Spit on that thing.
So our technique for blowjobs involve taking taking in spit that is so deep in her throat that she does and she spits on the dick of her husband. Well, it has become a national meme. It has been said that this girl, unlike the political extremist of the far left and the far right, is pushing a message of unity across the nation.
Thank you.